with a winged heart. A Nine Worlds story, written by Celebros and read by Calicuria. This story features the pairing Artoran Damara, also known as Fitzroy Angersell, and Cleofer Kip Madang, has been rated explicit and has been tagged "No archive warnings apply." Summary. A few weeks before the start of the viceroyship ceremonies, Kip finds himself the unwitting recipient of a truth serum. Chapter 1. Cleofer. Cleofer. Cleofer! I blink. It's Khonju, standing with his hands on my shoulders, and I go to answer him and realize that I'm already speaking, babbling, and Franzel is behind him, wringing his hands and looking near tears. I try to focus on what I'm saying, but it's like a stream, light and splashing past me, too quick to hold, not enough to catch, somehow.
Get Sir Roden,
Khonju says tightly to Franzel, and then turns away from me quickly to stop Franzel before he can obey. No, he's on duty. His radiancy will... He looks back at me, face pruned in a very sweet and very rare worry. I remember that look from my bout with Bonebreak Fever, before which I had not known if Khonju actually liked me, or if he rather thought of me as so many of the Aristos did, as a very entertaining exhibit, a glimpse of a funny little costumed monkey. Khonju looks stricken. What about his radiancy? Am I late? I rise. Why was I crouched in the corner like this, as if I'd been ducking to avoid some swooping bird of prey?
I'll get him, Khonju says. I doubt I'll be able to dissuade his radiancy from coming along. Try to get him sitting, but don't give him anything to eat or drink.
Franzel looks distressed at this. My mouth is strange, certainly, so water would not have gone amiss, but instead I let Franzel settle me gently in the chair in the bedroom, and he hovers for a moment. He looks so anxious. Perhaps I'm ill. Perhaps I'm dying. Perhaps he is worried about what will become of him. His radiancy might be coming. And Roden. Yes, good. They will help entangle whatever it is that is going on. His radiancy might be coming, so I'm trying not to be afraid. I don't want him to see me afraid. It makes him so unhappy when he feels he can't protect me. Franzel makes a soft noise and covers his mouth with one hand for a moment. He's looking very intently at me, with something like pity in his eyes. The clunk of spears in the outer room announces the presence, and Khonju murmurs something and then sweeps in. He looks relieved at first to see me. I like Franzel, and I'm safe with him, but I'm glad Kanji's back. And then very quickly he looks pained again. I try to be sensible and patient, and not demand to know why his radiancy isn't coming in yet. And Khonju sighs, and waves a hand to the guards, and then his radiancy is sweeping in, one lovely, long-fingered hand rising to a gentle, quelling gesture, keeping me from sinking out of the chair and into my obeisance. Roden is close behind him, almost too close. Oh, he's making sure I'm not about to try to touch. I suppose, if I'm unwell.
Disinhibited, his radiancy pronounces softly.
Ah, yes. If I'm disinhibited, I might reach for him. I nearly do a dozen times a day when I'm not a flailing mess of a man. A dozen times an hour, sometimes, when his eyes are particularly sad or his face particularly serene. When he's far away from me and sitting right there. Right now he's not very far away. Out of the reach of my arm, but very close. Very, very close, in the burning amber gold of the lion eyes.
Whatever it is not only magic,
his radiancy says.
There is another element. Poison, most likely.
Franzel flinches and throws himself into obeisance. His radiancy's expression, just for a fraction of a moment, shows annoyance. He doesn't like it when people offer obeisance, but most especially when he is distracted from a task by people offering their obeisance. Khonju looks at me as if I have said something odd. Which is itself odd, since I haven't said anything at all.
Oh,
Khonju says. His radiancy has turned to address Franzel, Franzel is frantically reciting what I've had to eat and drink in the past 24 hours. He remembers much better than I do. He doesn't know what I had when I was in the offices this morning, though. He was aware of it before I came to get you. Kanju says to Rodin in an undertone, and Rodin nods, lips twisting in apparent thought. Kanju's voice is so lovely when he lowers it like that.
He said something about eating in the offices just now,
Rodin says, and his radiancy turns his head.
Sir Rodin, investigate with all haste,
he says, and gestures for Franzel to stand.
Begin with the offices, if you will. We believe that to be a more likely route than anyone or anything in this household.
Rodin bows and departs. Franzel tries to smooth himself as he stands, looking shaky but unmistakably grateful. I hope his radiancy will dismiss him to the outer room so he can regain his composure. His radiancy looks at me and gives a slight huff of a laugh.
That's our Cleofer,
he says, and his voice is wry and warm and Tor, so beloved.
Worrying about everyone except himself. Go on, Franzel. We will not hesitate to call on you if we have need of you.
Franzel shoots me a rather desperate look. He's worried about me. They all are, I suppose. And retreats with a deep bow. And I am left alone with Kanju and his radiancy and the guards at the door. Elish and Vara. His radiancy is gazing at me with a kind of serious softness to his eyes that I have not seen since Navikiani. He and Kanju exchange a speaking glance. Kanju hesitates infinitesimally, then bows and withdraws to the outer room. His radiancy sits in the chair on the other side of my desk, as if he is a petitioner.
Cap,
he murmurs.
I'm sorry about this. We're going to be so mortified on the other side of it, and if I were willing to be any less careful with you, I would... I suppose I should say it might be kinder of me to leave you in someone else's keeping.
I rebel against this idea, enough that I stir somewhat. I want to tell him that it is never kinder of him to leave me, but of course he would mistake that. I would never wish him to feel obligated.
Never that,
he says, and it occurs to me that he seems to understand what I'm thinking.
Unfortunately so,
he says.
Disinhibition, as I said earlier. If I had to guess, I suspect you have imbibed an unusually potent truth serum, augmented by magic.
I process this for a moment, and then understand with mounting horror.
I am sorry,
he says again, and I realize that it is awkward in his mouth because it is unfamiliar. His lips twist, and he nods.
If it helps, please know that I am...
He swallows, and seems briefly uncertain. He looks sharply away, and breathes deeply, then looks back at me. Right at me.
I know that you wouldn't say these things to me, if you were in control of your speech. So I am angry in your behalf. But I am also... You know. I can see that you know.
I do.
I am, selfishly, terribly glad. Not that I had any doubts about the sincerity of your... affection.
He hesitates. This time, through force of will, I am aware of the words floating from my mouth. A quiet, firm correction. My love. And his radiancy... My lord, my Tor, lifts a hand to cover his face and nods.
Your love,
he agrees. His voice is hoarse with emotion. I should say it more, I tell him. Tor, I'm saying this on purpose. I should say it more. I should be sure to remind you. I don't want you to ever forget. He lifts his eyes back to mine. They are shimmering with tears, and I want to take his face in my hands and... He blinks. My thoughts have quivered to a halt. For just a moment, I had stopped speaking. Now I've started again.
Perhaps you're regaining some control,
he says, looking at once hopeful and, behind that, trying to hide it from me, a little disappointed. I don't think so, I say. It's just, there are lines I try not to cross, in my head. Cutting myself off, it's a habit, a reflex.
Ah,
he says, gentle and understanding. No, don't. You don't have to. You're allowed to feel how you feel, I blurt.
I'm really not,
he says quietly. And how am I to deny that? I want to. I want to pounce on that idea, squash it, strangle it, but I will not deny him his experience of his own reality.
Thank you, Cleofar,
he says, and stands.
Commander Elmo.
Ludovic appears in the doorway. I hadn't known they had summoned him. He looks at me the way he had that morning that his radiancy had inadvertently weighed down on me. Dutiful worry accompanied by the additional layer of the worry of his friendship. And as if, I think, he understands more about it than I do.
I do,
he says, reminding me that not even the most mundane of my thoughts is private now.
There's a ritual. This is not that.
His radiancy's voice is flat, almost angry.
No, my lord.
Ludovic agrees quietly.
Although Rodin will check the supplies of the guard to see if any are missing.
Yes, my lord. My thoughts are tumbling through who might do this to me. There are far, far too many possibilities. Ludovic shakes his head at a few of them, and his radiancy is looking tired.
You've been stepping into the viper's nest for me more and more, Kip,
he says.
You always seem to come back unscathed. Clearly, I've grown incautious.
Ordinarily, I would bite back several intemperate comments. Now, of course, I share them all.
Ludovic,
his radiancy says, and lowers his voice so that I'm almost unable to make out the words.
I regret the need to ask you, but please bring Cleofer to the apartments. I'll go back the more public way.
It is nothing for you to regret, my lord, Ludovic murmurs back. It is the safest way.
Conju,
his radiancy calls, and my dear friend appears at Ludvig's shoulder.
You will accompany them. I will see you shortly. We shall need to cancel the afternoon's audiences.
Yes, my lord, Conju says, clearly having already done so and not willing to admit the presumption out loud, which of course I just have. Blessedly, his radiancy laughs.
I would not have expected this to embarrass the rest of us quite so much,
he says. Cleofer cannot be blamed for being observant, Conju says, face taut. Or correct.
No, indeed. Kip.
Why am I going to the Imperial Apartments? I ask deliberately, and add several other inane thoughts before he can answer.
I cannot cancel my appointments to spend the day in your apartments without starting some rather pointed rumors, my dear Lord Chancellor. But nor am I willing to let you out of my sight, for any longer than absolutely necessary. Whoever has done this to you means you ill, and knows that you are vulnerable right now. And although it is not wholly a magical ailment, there is certainly magic within it, and it will not be trifling if it reached you.
He looks as though he thinks I'm going to object, as if he doesn't remember that not a quarter hour ago I confessed that I wanted him never to leave me. And then, of course, he looks wry and a little bit embarrassed, which is blasphemy but also true, and...
I will not leave you for long, my dear Kip,
he says, and swirls majestically out of the room. Ludovic waits until the outer doors close, and then laughs, full-throated, his strong shoulders shaking.
He does, he says. He does swirl majestically. Now I'm never going to be able to unthink it.
I glare balefully at him and launch several scathing barbs. Conju turns to Ludovic.
If there is a secret passageway that you have never told me about, I'm going to be very upset,
he says, and Ludovic ducks his head, clapping a hand to the back of his neck.
His radiancy insisted that we keep it quiet,
he says, a touch pleading. He knows this flavor of Conju's wrath as well as I do, I see.
Even the other guards don't know.
He seems to be implying that there is a secret passageway,
into the Imperial apartments. Gods, no wonder he seemed to think Ludwig would be upset. This is a security nightmare. Don't be overdramatic. You knowing makes you, at worst, a threat to his modesty. Kanju knowing is only sensible. Kanju looks somewhat mollified by that assertion. I'm trying completely unsuccessfully not to splutter about having no intention of sneaking to the Imperial apartments without permission, but Ludwig is rolling his eyes. This is when I learn that the secret passageway leading to the Imperial apartments begins in my chambers. The passage is dark, but less musty than I'd have expected. Ludwig walks ahead of me, Kanju behind, frequently with a hand on the small of my back. I wish that I could say it is not necessary, but I'm not entirely... I can't remember the word, which seems rather unfair of my subconscious, if a bit pointed. I'm wobbling, and truth be told, when in the close and dark, I'm able to wrap my mind around what is happening to me. I try to use a softer word, but no, it's terror. I'm terrified of what this might mean. If it comes to it, I will ask His Radiancy to mute me. I cannot be sent away. I cannot. Not now. Not when I'm so close. He would never send you away, Kanju says quietly. I want to believe it, but if it was for the good of Zunid, or worse, if it was what His Radiancy became convinced was right for me... Not against your will, Kanju says, in a tone that brooks no argument. And then we are emerging into a small library, stuffed with Estendalen law books and Zuni history and sociology and biography. I commit the room to memory, so that in the future when His Radiancy disappears for a book, I can picture him here, looking around, perhaps wagging his finger at the shelves as he looks for a book. He doesn't fetch books. He sends me, Cleofer, Kanju mutters. Really? And I try to frown at him and remind him of the joy of doing ordinary things that our Lord had showed at Navikiani, but it's hard to frown and talk at the same time. Ludwig stifles a laugh. It's good that Ludwig can laugh. Maybe that means I'm not dying. Kanju hisses, whirling on me with his shoulders up, for a moment reminding me of nothing so much as an angry cat.
Don't even think it,
Kanju snarls. I've been trying very hard not to think it.
Not helping, Ludwig says, helpfully.
Do you doubt His Radiancy, Cleofer?
Kanju continues. That's a false equivalence, I say, and provide the definition and a few examples before my mind unerringly circles back to not dying.
What are you feeling physically? Ludwig asks. He will doubtless have already called for Domina Audrey.
Domina Audrey is His Radiancy's personal physician. It is highly inappropriate for her to be called for me. Of course, it is also sensible that only those in the circle of implicit trust have any access to me while I am in the state of being unable to preserve either state secrets or personal confidences. Ludwig had asked me a question. I assess. I thought I was feeling clearer when we were in the passageways because there wasn't as much sensory overload, but I think I might actually just be clearer. Not quite as... drunk.
I've seen you drunk, Kanju mutters.
That is true. Kanju has seen me drunker than... probably anyone except Basil. I don't want to be maudlin, so I turn away from that thought at once. I miss Basil. I'm not saying I'm entirely clear-headed, but I'm not... foggy. Where is he? They look at each other, and then back at me. Ludwig's eyes clear.
Just beyond here, he says,
and Kanju's mouth makes a quiet O. Dominant Audrey doesn't linger.
It certainly seems to be truth serum, she says, but exacerbated somehow. Keep him calm and sedated until it wears off, and be sure it's done. It does ebb and flow at times.
Well, His Radiancy says when she is gone,
I think perhaps it is best that we assume you will be here until morning, at least. Kanju, arrange another bed for Cleofer. Discreetly, please. Ludwig and Roden can help you carry it.
Carry it, my lord?
To the bedchamber.
Kanju's mouth opens soundlessly, closes again, and he bows.
I will not have him out of my sight.
his radiancy says, and actually rolls his eyes. Although fortunately for Kanju's sake, he's still on his bow and misses it. Except, of course, that I'm narrating. Kanju's cheeks darken. His radiancy just looks slightly chagrined. I will arrange things, my lord, Kanju says, and leaves. I suppose it's pointless to suggest we needn't put Kanju to the trouble, I sigh, after a beautiful few seconds of silence. His radiancy, not his radiancy, Tor, this is very much Tor, looks at me with eyes slightly widened.
I think I may have scandalized him by suggesting that we share the room,
he says, strained and with a hint of question. Ah, I meant I could sleep on the floor, or the lounge, or... But, oh gods, no. He had been thinking of that day in his study after Pali of Ramapol, of me holding him through the violet angora, and now suddenly I'm imagining curling up in that absurdly beautiful canopy bed, him beneath the sheets and me atop them, perhaps, snuggled at his back. Tor raises the wall of silence around the two of us some time during the course of this babble. Luckily for both of us, I think he managed it before I said Pali of Ramapol's name out loud in the Palace of Stars, also before the rest of the treason. Of course, he wouldn't have sent Ludwig down to meet with her if he didn't trust him.
Did she tell you her name?
Tor asks, and I shake my head. The illusion in the marketplace, I say. I recognize the woman on the elephant. He closes his golden eyes and sighs heavily.
I had forgotten,
he says.
I hadn't meant to include her, you know. I meant to just get the elephant, but I couldn't help but imagine, and...
You touched the dragon, I say. And then the moon lady.
This is not...
I'm sorry, I can't stop.
I know, Kip.
He looks tired. That's another thing I don't remember from before the heart attack. I'm sorry. I'm trying so hard not to think about things. I keep finding new things not to think about.
Let me distract you,
he says, and removes the wall of silence.
Ludwig, Kip and I are going to execute another tactical retreat to my study. Help Kanju if he needs, and check in with Roden. But when you've finished, get some rest. I'd like to have you on guard tonight.
Of course, my lord, he says, and escorts us through to the doors to the private study. I manage to keep up a steady stream of appreciation for them, admiration of the art, and other things that I refuse to think of as trivial, but that are neither surprising nor treasonous. And Tor gives a slow but rather gusty sigh of relief when we're finally behind the closed doors of his study. He turns his back to me and waves his hands, some small magics whose effects I cannot see. Is it odd that I'm not afraid to commit treason in front of you? I ask.
Not particularly. Surely you know how your flavor of treason delights me.
He smiles at me, more relaxed in here than, well, than any other time I can remember since the last time I was here, and that was when the stars fell down around us, when... Something draws me to look at his face. His expression is soft and a little bit sad.
Fond,
he suggests.
And relieved that you don't seem traumatized, remembering that. I was a terror all on my own that day.
Your magic was beautiful. And so were you.
Well, there we have it.
But he is still smiling, albeit more ruefully now.
If at any point you change your mind about wanting me here...
I always want you with me. Tor, you know you could always ask, even when I'm not under a truth serum... I would tell you anything.
The fact you would tell me anything is precisely why I can never ask, Kip.
But I wouldn't mind. If it's something you want to know, I want you to know it.
Oh, certainly.
He bites sarcastically.
You would tell me I'm beautiful without a truth serum.
If you wanted me to. I say, feeling a bit tender about this. If I'm too much like this, you don't have to stay.
You are never too much for me,
he says, and he's entirely too sincere about that. I bring a hand up to hide my face, and a moment later he gives a small huff of irritation, and with a whump I'm engulfed in a very familiar angora and led to the divan.
He sits next to me, close enough that I cannot hide from him. I drop my hand and look at him, at his kind lion eyes, at his arm, his fingertips resting on the angora, which is draped messily over me. He lifts his hands to adjust it, neaten it, as if he is straightening my collar, and then smooths his hands down my shoulders and arms. There are several layers of fabric between us, but I shiver. Oh, we both shiver. Because it is still touch, right now, to us. Still something treasured and longed for and forbidden. He's looking at me. Right at me.
What would you ask me?
He whispers.
If I was the one affected by this.
I'd want to ask your name, but I wouldn't. It's important to me that I learn it by your choice. I think I have thought a great deal about what you said, about Fitzroy Ingersoll. His breath comes in sharply, and his fingers, resting at the crooks of my elbows, tremble. Would it be terrible if I asked you where to look for him?
No. I don't know.
Perhaps. Those are three different answers, my lord, I say, but he neither smiles at the rebuke nor frowns at the unintended title. He seems to be somewhere else, all of a sudden. Because you think I would try to free him.
I know you would.
He was your friend, I say, a statement among the day's most treasonous.
Not quite.
He huffs and ducks his head, finally breaking my gaze.
Close enough, I suppose. It is... Kip, it is very good to hear you say his name.
I used to say his name a great deal. Fitzroy Ingersoll, the one and only Fitzroy Ingersoll. I've always loved him. He clears his throat.
You are quite fond of Aurora.
I furrow my brows at him. I suppose that's not a difficult guess. Aurora is fairly broadly agreed to be his most superlative work, but I'm quite sure I've never mentioned that to you. His lips twitch in amusement.
Not hard to guess,
he agrees.
I'm afraid this is a dangerous conversation for me, even just between the two of us, Kip. Tell me something you would like me to know. Perhaps something about the Vangaveeva.
Among my favorite topics, as he well knows. My first inclination is to tell him about the day I got my obsidian, but of course that will not help, so I start to explain instead about the star path between Loa Loa and Gorgio City. He eventually asks me about Aotekatetana, about how I'd begun to learn it, and what I'd used to keep from burning, and I lift my leg and tug aside the fabric of my sandals to show him the burns, leaning back to balance, and his hands come to my shoulders to brace me, almost an embrace. I stop, silent again for a moment, nothing but feeling, and his fingers tighten on my biceps.
You can,
he says quietly,
lean against me, or set your head in my lap, if you'd like.
Oh, I breathe, and shift to set my feet on the divan, leaning back. He adjusts the angora again, and setting my head against his chest. When I glance up at him, his eyes are closed, his expression unmistakably blissful.
This is dangerous, too,
he murmurs, but grabs my shoulders before I can lift away.
Don't. Please. I... Kip, I...
He swallows audibly and smooths at the fabric again.
Talk to me.
It's dangerous because you're afraid of wanting. He laughs. On the edge of bitterness.
Not of wanting. Wanting is easy. Having and believing are quite another matter.
You have me, I tell him, because it's true and he seems to need to hear it. I am here, Tor.
But I still cannot...
He cuts off with a growl of frustration.
You can't understand what it's like to spend 1,000 years alone with your own skin.
If you could touch, I start, and in my head I falter, but my mouth follows through. What would you do? His eyes meet mine solemnly.
You must know that that is a dangerous question,
he says.
Do you actually want me to answer it?
I don't know, I admit. But you're right that I know it is dangerous. For both of us.
Then perhaps it's best I...
I would take your hand, I say. Or I would cup your dear face between my hands. I would greet you the way a wide sea islander greets his family and dear friends, forehead to forehead, to share breath. Even today, I could set a hand on your shoulder, couldn't I? As long as there was cloth between us.
In theory,
he says, warning. Or I could lie behind you in bed and put an arm around your waist, as long as I was atop the sheets.
Stop,
he breathes.
Kip, you... I know you can't help it. I know you don't mean to be cruel.
I mean it. I think I do want to know, even if it's dangerous. He's silent for long enough that my babbling takes over, and then his brows twitch inward, and he says,
I would ask to touch your hair, right now, and ask you how to show me how people greet one another. I'd been thinking about that already. That after the ceremony, when we can, I would bring you back here and have you teach me. I think it will be less overwhelming to learn it from you.
I see. Yes. Or Ludvig. Or Konju.
No. You.
Oh. That feels significant, somehow. Surely Ludvig...
It's not about Ludvig, Kip.
You mean it's about me? He looks at me with eyes bright and warm.
You needn't sound so surprised.
Ludvig did say you love me as a brother. He chokes slightly.
Ludvig.
He starts, and then shakes his head.
I've never been able to say it, Kip. One day, when we're both free... Or when I am under the influence of a certain truth serum. That would certainly be interesting.
I'd take care of you, I blurt, and then, if you want it.
I wouldn't have it any other way,
he says softly.
But, Kip, you deserve to be cherished. I cannot.
But you can. You do. I redden, but it's true. You don't need to say it. I know. Tor, you'll be rid of it one day. Not so very long now. Measured in months or weeks rather than years. It's so soon. You can make it until then. And then you can touch my hair and my hands, and I will show you how to greet people if that is what you want. And you're going to go out into the world. You will have a marvelous adventure, I'm sure of it. He's trembling slightly beneath me, a fine and consistent tremor. Even with the fabric between us, it is good to feel him. The tangible evidence of his heartbeat, which had always felt like a fact of the universe until the day it had not.
I'm all right,
he says. I was so scared, I say.
So was I,
he admits, and I close my eyes tight to hold back a staggering swell of emotion. Disinhibited, yes. Certainly more vulnerable than I'm used to, even without the verbal deluge.
A lighter topic, then,
Tor says, and I feel the mischief in his voice without even needing to look at his face.
What do you really think of Prince Rufus?